Wilson.
The Center Steer Podcast, a Land Rover podcast by Land Rover owners. Welcome to the Center Steer Podcast. I'm John Kohustich, your host. Today is the 29th of March, 2015. This is the 24th episode of the Center Steer Podcast, 2-year anniversary. Although we did do a couple test episodes before, this is still our big anniversary. What are we doing for the anniversary? We're having the Lizzie Bus folks join
Hello.
Us.
Hello!
Okay. And that's Jane and Dave. I was going to call you Mike. I'm sorry.
No, I'm not a Mike.
So we'll talk to them in a few minutes.
Do we need the post-it notes again?
So this is our second anniversary, and we'll start, as we always do, with the news. And first up, Range Rover is testing a Vauc convertible. And to our friend Nick Danger, I think he wanted to say it, Evoque-O or something. But he's finally listening to the podcast. So they're coming up with a convertible. Reason I bring it up, it seems to be a return in some ways to series days. You're going to have a canvas convertible top on a Land Rover, which we haven't seen in basically since the Defender. But
well, and it's also a little closer to the DC-100 that they showed with a convertible option.
True.
I'm just curious if it'll be a power top.
Ooh, it didn't say that in the article. That's a good question. Well, they didn't show it move, so they were just doing cold weather testing.
I'm betting a Range Rover will have a power top somehow.
You'd think that would be the price of admission.
Yeah.
I'd be happy if it just took less than 10 minutes to put it down.
Or a day and a half, half a day. Take off the canvas and move the hoop set.
Right.
It's called a manual power top.
Yes, that is a manual power top. It's going to be competing with nothing. So, because apparently the only other convertible that was out there in its class was a Nissan Murano Cross Cabriolet, but that has ceased production. So it may be a manual top. Because why do they need to have an automatic one?
Because it's a Range Rover.
Well, yeah.
And it's a Range Rover Evoque at that.
So not a real Range Rover.
I'm curious how much this increases weight and reduces, capacity.
Or rigidity.
Or rigidity, yeah.
But a power top would add weight because you'd have an extra mechanism.
So. Yeah, they generally, anytime you go convertible, you have to increase, body strengthening and overall weight to handle the change in structure.
Correct. Usually at least 200 pounds.
10 miles per hour.
But the new Ingenium engine will fix everything. Maybe it'll be diesel. That could be cool.
Because that'll make it faster.
The Americans are missing out on the diesels from the UK.
Tell me about it.
We know. Although they are coming out, they plan to next year with two models supposed to be diesel in the United States. I think a Range Rover and a Range Rover Sport.
Yeah, we're finally getting the TDV6.
So we're
you'll be surprised at the performance of those vehicles.
Yeah,
the diesel is the way to go with the big vehicles.
Yeah. So next up, Jaguar Land Rover is still supposed to build a plant in the United States to keep up with demand, but it may take 3 years. And the reason for the delay, according to the article on Autoblog, is the other plants that they're building. They built one in China. They built one in Brazil. They're building the new engine plant in the UK. So I think just focus. They're going to come around to the United States in a couple of years and to meet up with demand. Interesting little stat from the article. The plant would have to support one model that could sell 30 to 40,000 units per year. In the U.S. So that's the threshold that they are trying to get to. They sold 18,000 units of the Range Rover Sport last year. So that gives you some idea what they're looking for.
I assume that was a higher number.
I did too.
Yeah. Wow. Well, the American market, sales will probably actually increase if they do have a plant here. just for the amount of support that they can get for producing them locally, ish.
Some, but would it actually hit the 30,000 threshold? That's an interesting number.
It certainly would not, you know, basically almost double that, you know.
Well, I bring to you two models I think that'll help push that number, the Discovery Sport and the new Defender. I think those will substantially increase their sales here. Disco Sport looks to be a hot seller. So
it definitely could be. The new Defender is still a big if.
Clearly. But I think it's going to sell. I just have a feeling it's going to sell here.
Well, you're going to get a lot of interest in the first year, and then we'll see if it has staying power.
Absolutely. Well, just like the Evoque, same way.
It's going to get a lot of new interest. I don't think it's going to get a lot of the current Defender fan base jumping on board right away.
They've already moved on.
Right.
Yeah, they're not going to come with you because they're going to stay behind.
It's a good thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
It brings more to the mark.
Yes.
Now, you may get some Defender fans that show up just to see what it is. Whether they'll buy or not is another story.
I would love to have one in my garage. I don't care what it comes out looking like.
Our Defender's a 1998 Defender, so obviously there's going to be a lot of tweaking on the new one. However, when we did drive it around the States, the interest in Defenders was just unquestionable.
Yes, still is.
Yeah. Yes.
I'm like Mark. I might buy one of the first ones, especially if it was a diesel. If they come out with a diesel here.
Even if I think it's an abomination of a Land Rover, I'd love to have it sit in my garage.
Yeah. No, you want it outside. You don't want it in the garage. That's a bad sign.
Stop it. You're not making any fun to the Land Rover reliability, are you?
I'm thinking about, in particular, Mark's garage. They won't fit anything taller than a BMW.
He can't even fit the BMW in his garage.
Well, not anymore.
He can always get a new garage.
That's the plan. The driveway's full.
You just lift the house about 2 feet, and you can build a bigger garage underneath it.
It is on the need list for the new house.
Oh, you're thinking about a new house now?
Yes.
Oh,
strictly because of the garage.
His Rover fleet has outgrown the house he has.
Well, it seems about fair because the wife probably needs a bigger wardrobe for the shoes. You can have a big garage for the Defender.
Exactly. And I'm okay with that compromise.
How'd you know, Jane?
I'm not a shoes and clothes person, but I'm sure my friends are.
Sounds like Dave has one too many pairs of boots.
I possess one pair. That's it.
Moving on, I brought this article up about the Autobiography Luxury Edition because it's A, 21 years old, and B, I didn't realize it was a thing. It's like part of the Land Rover's normal marketing aspects. They have these special one-offs that they have now moved into the other marks, or other models, excuse me. And so Autobiography is a thing, apparently. I didn't know that.
We live a sheltered life here in the States.
We do.
For sure. Now, if only I could get one of those 20-year-old Autobiography Edition Range Rovers.
Wait another 4 years.
But true.
Get on the list.
That's not so bad.
Not sure you'd want one.
Automatic suspension.
Say it again.
With the incredibly reliable pneumatic suspension.
Oh, yeah.
They're not that tough to work on.
Or convert back to springs.
That's castration. I can fix the real one for what you'd pay for replacing it.
No. So it's 21 years old. My question to you, Morgan, would be what's the depreciation on one of those after 21 years, 25 years? $100,000 to start.
Oh, yeah.
They were never that expensive in England. We have the advantage.
True.
Don't have to pay for the boat ride.
No.
So along those lines, Jag's special vehicle operations could build special standalone models. So they build one-offs and some extra special fun things. But they may be possibly considering standalone one-offs.
Sitting here imagining what they could possibly build that they haven't built already. and what they could sell as a standalone model.
Yeah, I'm just thinking that back in the day that was something, but now it's just badge engineering in my mind.
Well, what would be the difference between the SVO and the autobiography? They seem, is this a marketing difference?
Yeah. It's trim, it's features, things like that.
Yeah, I think it's going to be one of those kinds of things where, you know, they're able to really push forward on technological advancements. But you pay, you know, a very pretty penny for that.
So the Discovery Sport was reviewed by our special
correspondent.
Not yet. Well, he's unemployed now, so maybe he could join the podcast. Richard Hammond. So before the fracas, he talked about the Discovery Sport. I bring it up because, A, it was Richard Hampson.
The hamster.
I bring it up. Yeah, the hamster. and he likes the vehicle, thinks it's going to sell like hotcakes. And there were some other, I found out it was a little bigger than the current Freelander, which I didn't realize.
Well, Jeff said the same thing.
And he generally liked the vehicle overall. There's there was a tweet that Netflix might be talking to
I'm sure
Clarkson about doing Top Gear on or excuse me, a show, automobile show.
He should.
And our friends in Birmingham, not the Lizzie Bus folks, but Land Rovers Live has a nice roundup of the new Defender news. So if that interests you, I'll have a link to it. And just generally bringing some of the information together, talking about what might be coming up. You know, it's supposed to debut in 2017. There might be an announcement in early next year. And he talks about some of the things to consider as part of its coming up. You know, we know the design has been signed off on, and you know, some of the things else to consider. It's probably not going to have a ladder frame. It's going to be monocoque. And there you go. Thoughts,
so
ideas?
Not a proper Defender, then?
Depends on your...
Not an actual truck.
There'll be much sucking in blue teeth back in the UK over that. The purists will be most unhappy.
Yeah.
Here as well.
So that's the news. Now we'll go talk to Morgan, who's heading up our heritage segment. Morgan?
So last time we talked about brakes. This time I figured we would sort of push up the drivetrain a little bit and talk, you know, axles and differentials and all that. So, you know, since I run SeriousParts.com, I have a Series 3. I mostly think about series vehicles, so we'll start there and continue there. So with the series Land Rovers, you basically have four always engaged hubs and front and rear differentials, and they are open differentials. So all power will be transferred to the wheel with the most slip, which generally when you're driving on flat, even surfaces with no slip, that means you'll get even power to all the wheels, but should one slip, you know, the one that slips, that gets all the power. Now,
that's assuming your transfer case is in four-wheel drive.
Right, that is correct. That is assuming that it's in four-wheel drive.
It's only a part-time to a four-wheel drive configuration.
Exactly. Which is, you know, a nice benefit that being in two-wheel drive, that's just power to the rear wheels. Same situation, of course. Should one of those rear wheels slip, then all the power goes to that slipping wheel. So there are some things that you can do there. In terms of the differentials, it is possible to put an air locker in there, locking differential, which will lock that differential in so that the power is distributed evenly to both wheels. That does require some very minor modification to put in an air locker, basically some shims and stuff like that. For
and
example,
an airline, of course,
and an airline,
and a compressor, and a tank,
and a tank. Now,
so you got help, Morgan?
I did, totally. and you know, one of the considerations there is that then you are putting a lot more stress on your driveline, your drivetrain components in that situation, which leads me to the next issue, which is those axle shafts.
Oh, yeah.
In a series Land Rover, they are, let's just say they are the weak link in the the chain. They break frequently. Let's see. I think in most models, you're looking at a 10 spline at the differential end, up to 24 spline on the hub end. They tend to shear off. You can actually shear them off pretty easily just by dumping it on pavement, trying to peel out a little bit. So, seen lots of problems there. Unfortunately, they tend to break on the differential end, which means that they're a little more work to pick all the pieces out before you can drive home without causing further damage. There are a couple of companies over the years who have produced hardened axle shafts. I don't believe that any are being produced at this time. I could be wrong about that.
Isn't GBR still making them?
Last I checked, they were, but possibly had some issues getting them.
Okay.
And GBR is Great Basin Rovers. I think they have officially switched to GBR due to the naming.
That's why I used that. They dropped the Rover name.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. And they're out of Utah.
There's two companies in the UK that supply hardened drive shafts. That's CAM, K-A-M, and Ashcroft Transmissions.
Oh, yes. I forgot that Ashcroft was doing that. Thank you.
That's the mildest of the things that Ashcroft does. They do all kinds of really cool stuff.
They do, for sure. Yes, definitely.
You know, the other alternative is to get yourself a Salisbury rear axle.
And that was one of the things I was going to go over. So the Salisbury rear axle, there actually were for a while there some front axles that you could get. They're huge money. They're basically a Dana 60 differential in there. And they were used on the high-capacity pickups and some of the military vehicles, I believe, in terms of standard equipment.
Very few of the military ones, unfortunately.
Yeah. So, very pricey to get your hands on.
But you
in terms of non-standard... go ahead.
I was going to say... typically what breaks is the rear half shaft, however, and the Salisbury rear is not that hard to get your hands on.
Right. Definitely.
I know somebody that's got one.
Or a couple.
In the United States.
Very nice.
The problem we have in the UK is that you have great difficulty to get people working on your Salisbury back axle. Not many people do repair works on them, because it's not as common as it is in America, because it's the Dana 60 in America.
Right. It is. Yeah, you just have to tell the locals what it's based on, and then they can understand it and get to work.
They can work
exactly
on Rover axles.
We have the opposite
the UK,
problem. We have...
They very rarely find somebody to work on a Salisbury axle.
And we have the opposite problem. We have trouble finding people to work on our old Land Rovers, but then if you pull in a truck... say it's a Dana 60 back there. Like, oh, okay, I got it.
Yeah. Have you tried going to a Jag shop? Because the center is very similar.
Yeah, it's actual sort of companies that will work on those axles, there are very, very few in the UK.
Okay.
Yeah. I'll kill that one.
No, you didn't. We're just waiting for more.
Exactly. I'm just checking my notes here.
We actually learned something. We have breaking news.
Absolutely. So, you know, in terms of the differentials, you have the option of, you know, going with the stock Rover axles. You can go with Salisbury's. You can, you know, you can put locking differentials in there. I honestly don't know if there are any limited slip differentials available for the series Land Rovers or.
Yep.
Nice.
That would be nice.
So, what are our options, Harold?
Let me think here for a second.
That's right. True Track?
Yeah, the True Track is available for both the Salisbury and the Rover axle, and it's a nice one because it's a torque biasing type. And I think you can also get the old-fashioned Detroit Locker type as well.
Yep, you can get the Detroit Locker, totally.
How does that show up in your center display on the video to show the loft being moved on the screen? Is that such a plug?
Exactly. Yes, it's a. and I, in terms of using the standard axle carriers and diff carriers, I believe that some people will modify them to put Toyota diffs and axle shafts in there. That's about as far as you can go with the standard carriers. Honestly, switching to Salisbury is probably the best bet.
Last time I looked, and well, maybe this is a while ago, I don't know if they're still doing it, but Ashcroft was playing around with the idea of putting a 9-inch Ford center section into a Rover case.
Ooh, nice.
Yeah, of course, Ashcroft money, but there's no way
right.
to blow one up because those things will take as much power as you could possibly run through it.
Exactly.
Is Ashcroft available here in the United States, or is that something you bring in one off?
Yeah, you can ship into the U.S. from Ashcroft.
They will sell direct.
They have
the
a
US.
Lot. Yeah,
okay. I've done it.
What kind of money are we talking?
Well, they're pricey, but then of course you've also got the shipping and the customs and all that stuff too. So it's not a cheap option, but it is an option.
And they have a lot of options. They do, like we said, the axle shafts, probably the diff options. They do new gearings and rebuild kits for the gearbox and transfer case. They do rebuilt transfer cases and engines. They have a lot of options.
I've put Ashcroft reconditioned gearbox and transfer box in my Land Rover, and I think the exchange price for the transfer box is equivalent to about $600.
Yeah, not bad.
And probably about $700 for
the
gearbox.
Yeah, not bad. Oh.
And if...
very nice.
I might add, actually, this sort of spurs something in my memory. Dave on our panel here has Ashcroft diffs in his disco. Now, I don't know if they make those available for the series truck or not, but they produce their own automatic torque biasing differentials.
Very nice.
They have a nice.
Yeah, I will have to go back to my research there.
Looks like they have a nice website. We'll have a link to it.
The biggest issue with our Defender is that we have a Salisbury axle on the back, which is a 4-pin differential. On the front differential, it's a Rover differential. It's only a 2-pin. So the weak spot is the 2-pin differential on the front.
Yep.
Absolutely.
And there's a company in the UK who, for the equivalent of about $600, will manufacture you a 4-pin differential for the front Rover.
Really? What company is that?
It's a company called Mega Squirt.
Nice.
I know you have your V8 Mega Squirt over there, but there's a company in the UK, and he did me a 4-pin front differential, and it just bolts straight into a Rover diff, just bolted straight in, and it's a 4-pin.
Do you know if that could be modified to fit the rear diff on the short wheelbase
that you have
the Rover case?
I have no idea, but he's certainly a good guy to speak. He knows his stuff, and when he builds his differentials up, he uses Timken bearings, high tensile bolts. He does a very, very professional job.
Interesting.
So we have a 4-pin on the back and a 4-pin on the front.
You're really helping us spend our money here.
Absolutely.
I wish I was on commission. Tell them the Lizzie bus sent you. I might get something come back on that.
Let's see. And then, you know, beyond diffs, you sort of move up into your gearbox and transfer case. That might be a better discussion for another time because there are a lot of options there as well.
Especially if you want to talk about different gearing.
Right, exactly. But in terms of axles and differentials, you have one other option that's not so much a four-wheel drive option as a two-wheel drive option. That is to use... whoops, switch back to my notes here. to switch to freewheeling hubs on the front. And that basically just reduces some drag from turning those drive shafts and axle shafts and differentials while you're driving in two-wheel drive.
Which is what most of us do, except on the trail.
Right. Exactly. So that can be a nice little fuel savings.
It's very noticeable if you forget to unlock them when you're driving around on the road.
Especially when you snap a rear half shaft.
Yes.
And you have no wheel drive.
Exactly. So yeah, there are a few freewheeling hubs out there. They're a nice option. There's always some debate over how frequently you should re-engage them to make sure that, you know, oil gets distributed appropriately in your I'm blanking out.
Swivel.
In your swivel housings. Yeah, your joints and swivel housings. But beyond that, it reduces wear in addition to increasing fuel mileage, so
and acceleration.
Yes,
it might actually exist if you unlock your front wheels.
And you don't have to worry about braking then.
Braking what?
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. Well, you know, if you want better braking, then you can re-engage your hubs just to have, you know, that lower a high speed.
The extra drag.
And the extra drag.
With our Defender, the only issue with that is we have permanent four-wheel drive.
Right, definitely.
Although Ashcroft can set you up with a part-time four-wheel drive option for that and the freewheeling hubs.
Yeah, but I mean, on our journey, we got the equivalent with a vehicle that weighs 2.8 metric tons. 24 to the U.S. gallon on our journey.
Not bad.
Very nice.
That's
yeah.
really good.
But it is.
That's the advantage of diesel, which you're all missing out on.
You're running the 200 or the 300 TDI?
300.
Okay.
We're not all missing out.
Yeah, there's a little more involved than some people would know or
True.
Admit to.
Yes.
Yeah, we met quite a few.
But that's a teaser. We're not there yet. Teaser.
No.
Exactly. So I think that pretty much covers some of the basic rough options available for series for changes or improvements to the, you know, the drivetrain from your hubs up to your transfer case.
But don't forget the drive lines, Morgan, and the U-joints in them.
Yes, they... Are there more options? Because I don't think there are more. Well, obviously, if you change your axle carriers and diff housings, you may have to change your drive shafts there.
There are heavy duty drive shaft options and heavy duty U joint options as well.
Nice, excellent.
One of the big players over here is a company called Tom Woods, but there are others.
Very nice.
The Tom Woods is popular for the Discovery owners because the front drive shaft is sort of a weak spot, and he makes a really nice, uprated aftermarket front prop shaft.
He will make for anything, though. Just
but yeah, he'll build you whatever for whatever, however you want it.
That is excellent. And I think that's 4xshaft.com, as in 4xshaft.
I think you're right.
Excellent.
But the most important thing with your drive shaft, you can never grease it enough.
Exactly.
Yeah,
you must be greasing all the time.
Once you drive, it flings itself dry, so you have to start over again.
Yeah, just keep greasing it. It'll never complain about being over-greased.
Only
for
the
sure.
driveway will.
Yeah, the book says grease it every 6,000 miles, which is ridiculous. You should be doing it every 1,000. Minimum.
Every trail ride, and then every 1,000.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially if you're doing off-road, any water crossings, anything like that, by all means, re-grease.
Yeah, it's sort of a little side note to this and tie together two of the topics. We were talking about the freewheeling hubs, and I've had customers have to tow things in before because they snapped a rear half shaft, and then they call up and you say, put it in four-wheel drive and bring it in just on front-wheel drive, and they try that and there's still no motion. Well, that's because they didn't lock the hubs in. And maybe you tell them to lock the hubs in, and they only lock one. Whoops.
But there's another company called CAM, K-A-M.
Yep. Found them as well.
Heavy duty drive shafts.
Yep.
They do heavy-duty drive flanges, too, as I recall.
Yeah, and then the company for my four-pin front differential conversion is a company called Mega Squirt. And I say he's done a nice four-pin conversion on the front of mine. Just bolt straight into the Rover casing.
But that's not the same Mega Squirt that does the fuel injection stuff, is it?
No, he's cribbed that name. He does do the fuel injection stuff in the UK.
Okay.
So he's like the UK supplier.
He's like Mega Squirt UK then.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Does CAM do four-pin diffs as well?
Yes,
maybe not. Yeah.
They do four-pin diffs, and they do fused half shafts as well that will shear.
Oh, yeah.
That shear in a known place. Rather than breaking inside the differential, they'll shear right at the very end so you can get them out quite easily.
Yeah, the worst part about where they shear now is that they usually twist the spline at the same time, so you can't get it out easily.
No.
Exactly.
So, been there, done that.
Yeah, well,
I fortunately have not done that yet, but I expect to.
Well, the good news is they often don't break on the trail. They break once you get off the trail and back on pavement. The first time you pull out of the fuel station, they pop.
Right. Well, that's all I had.
Well, thank you, Morgan. What's coming up next month?
We will probably keep moving up the drivetrain.
Fantastic. All right, we'll take a break for... the M word. When we come back, we'll talk to the Lizzie Bus folks, which I know doesn't sound nice, but it's Dave and Jane. I call them the Lizzie Bus folks. Hope you don't mind that.
That's good enough for us.
Wonderful.
You wouldn't be the only ones to do that.
True. All right, now the M word.
For most of us in the eastern United States, this past winter has been one for the record books. Between record snowfall amounts, record low temperatures, and even record cold high temperatures, the statisticians have been very busy. Radio personality Garrison Keillor recently commented, with some dismay, that we have stolen the one thing that Minnesotans can truly brag about. Having lived through 21 Minnesota winters, I can tell you that what we went through just would have been a better-than-average winter in Minnesota, but it was certainly a sobering reminder of why I don't live there anymore. In school, I was a pretty smart kid, or at least good at figuring things out, but I just could not wrap my head around the legend of the groundhog. Not that I couldn't believe a rodent could predict the weather, but rather I just couldn't process the only two choices he gave us. In the beginning of February, we were told that we would either have an early spring or 6 more weeks of winter. The problem was that 6 more weeks would be an early spring. It didn't help when I sat down with a calendar and figured out that from the second day of February to the vernal equinox is just 2 days shy of 7 weeks. I also didn't understand why they would declare winter to be over when there was still plenty of snow on the ground. It would be a few years before I would learn two rather important things. Firstly, the concept of ambiguity, and secondly, that most places didn't have the extra special kind of winter that we, the people of the upper Midwest, were endowed with. Of course, it would be many more years before I'd get the idea that legends are often used to give hope to the masses, but perhaps that's a discussion for another day. In my 20s, I had the good fortune of going to college in California. It was a nice break from the cold Minnesota winters. It was also quite a culture shock, one that I hadn't expected. Several of my classmates were from the deserts of Southern California and had never seen winter before. When the temperature dipped into the low 40s, they would come to class complaining about how cold it was outside. It was freezing, they said. When I told them it was technically 9 degrees above freezing, I was dismissed as some kind of smartass, and they went back to complaining about the cold. When I told them it really wasn't cold unless the temperature had a minus sign in front of it, they just stared at me like deer in the headlights, which is funny because many of them had never seen deer before either. On the few rare occasions when the temps would dip into the low 30s, these desert dwellers would arrive at class almost apoplectic after braving the certain peril. Some would tell me they had to drive with their head out the window because their car was covered with ice. I would try to tell them it's just frost, to just scrape it off and go. But it's like ice, and it's all over the windshield, they would say. Again, not ice, just frost, just scrape and go. After a brief pause, they would ask how they're supposed to do that. With a scraper? Better hit the high beams, because Bambi's in the road again. I think the most valuable lesson I learned in my first semester was that there were actually people out there who have no clue what a windshield scraper is. I also needed to learn that there were places in this country where all the local businesses didn't give out free scrapers with their advertising on them. My Midwestern upbringing has left me well experienced in all things winter. I've taken the winter survival courses. I've gone camping with the Boy Scouts in unthinkably cold temperatures, and I have the merit badges to prove it. I can handle most anything that winter throws at me. Of course, if winter ever decided to not show up, I'd be fine with that too. I've paid my dues, and I've earned the right to either take it or leave it. I've been waiting and watching, and finally I've seen the signs that spring is coming. First, the crocus bulbs are blooming, only about a month behind schedule. The birds are out and about, but they look sad because there isn't much to eat yet. But finally, in the last few days, I've begun to see the surest sign of the coming spring. Poster boards advertising the local election candidates are sprouting up all along the roadsides. Now that we know spring is at our door, I should be telling you to do your spring maintenance, but I've used up my allotted time just rambling about winter. Besides, I gave the subject a fairly thorough treatment last year. If you need a refresher, perhaps you should revisit episode number 13 of the Center Steer podcast. If you have questions, you can send them to us by email or social media, or you can consult with a professional technician in your local area. April is National Car Care Month, so many shops will be running special promotions on maintenance services. Don't let winter be the death of your vehicle. Do your spring maintenance and do it well, so you can declare with confidence, death to winter.
Welcome back to the second anniversary edition of the Center Steer podcast. This is episode number 24. I would like to give a shout out to some of our listeners who have reached out to us in the last couple weeks and months. Jeff Harrison, the editor of Rose of North magazine, mentioned on Facebook that the podcast came up in some conversation, and they said nice things. Didn't say specifically what, but said nice things were said. So I like that. And a special shout out to Morgan the Wolf, whose Twitter account is P40Wolf. Apparently, he is an archaeologist in Arizona at the moment. Tells us he likes the podcast, even though he does not own a Land Rover. So
did he just undig one?
No. No. So he's an archaeologist. He listens to the podcast. So, hi, Morgan. I'll assume that's your first name. Thank you to all our listeners, wherever you may be. Thanks for shouting out and saying hi to us. And so there you go. It's our second anniversary. This is as much as we're doing.
We now have two listeners.
Oh, we have more than two.
Two that will admit to it.
Yeah, that's true. And hi to Derek. We always got to say hi to Derek, who's our listener in St. Louis.
And he keeps us well supplied with pictures of his truck out and about.
Absolutely.
UMR517J, I believe, is his truck.
We will now go to live from Birmingham, England. We're going to talk to the Lizzie Bus folks. That's Dave and Jane. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having us. It's just absolutely great. So it's quite kind of surreal that we're sitting here, as we mentioned, in Birmingham, and talking to you guys over there in the States, which is very familiar to us, having just driven for the last 5.5 years around the world in our Defender called Lizzie Bus.
That's fantastic. So, we're all jealous. Yeah. We're extremely jealous. You know that.
Very. Well,
at risk of repeating ourselves, which we tend to do, we just woke up, literally it was as quick thinking as this. We decided to buy one of those Land Rover things and actually drive it around the world. We hadn't even driven a 4x4. David worked for a firm of criminal solicitors and I worked in IT. We had absolutely no idea. We bought the Defender, sold a bit of a putt, to be perfectly honest, bought a few through a few boxes in the back, fitted a long-range fuel tank, and off we went. And we went, hey, look at us, we're overlanders.
Sure,
then we headed
for
Africa.
How hard
can it be? How hard can it be, precisely? So we just sort of headed for Africa. We did West Coast through the traditional Morocco down to South Africa. Then we came back up through Iran, Syria, Nigeria, Pakistan, and all those. We shipped from Bangladesh to Penang in Malaysia, and then we drove Cambodia, Vietnam, Thailand, Laos, and then we shipped from Singapore to Perth in Australia. We did the little tour around that little tiny island of Australia, shipped from Melbourne to Buenos Aires. We drove all the way down the bottom to Ushuaia, and then once there, we headed back up again, and we hit the top following the Alaskan pipeline to Prudhoe Bay. And we were going to go follow our noses and go to Russia. But by now, the 136,000 miles was taking its toll on Lizzie Bus and us. You know, everyone said we're living the dream, but you try living next to your partner for 2 foot away from each other for 5 and a bit years. We needed a break. So,
do you say that the trip was 136,000 miles in total?
Yeah, it was, and 66 countries and 6 continents.
And how many miles were on the Lizzie Bus before you started?
100,000.
So you hit 236 by the time it was done.
Yeah, pretty much, and a bit more probably.
So it was broken in then?
Just, yeah. The comment you guys made earlier about having your Land Rover in your garage was typical, because we spent a lot of time sleeping and living in garages across the world. There's a huge network. And I have to say, everyone says, which was your favorite continent, country, and all this? America and Americans have a naive curiosity that we absolutely adore. We were through the Grand Canyon, Utah, Arizona, all of those absolutely incredible countries. And Elizabeth, being a Defender, not being allowed in the States, being because she's has to be over 25 years old, was actually quite a bit of a star over there. And obviously with all the genuine Australian and Sahara red dust dirt and a few dents from, you know, stones and wild animals and all the rest of it.
Yeah, the Defender is a bigger curiosity here than in most third world countries.
Yes, we loved it. Absolutely loved it. And how was you, David, the mechanic?
I was the mechanic. But the one thing I will say for us driving the Defender, it was a right-hand drive car as well.
Good for that. I like
and
it.
That caused a lot of confusion because one of us would be driving and the other person would be sitting in our passenger seat with their feet hanging out the window. And that put a few funny looks on people's faces when they overtook us. They were going, what the?
Try doing it with the dog in that seat.
Even better, yeah.
We wanted to buy a takeoff steering wheel and just sort of like all of a sudden bring it out of the window.
There you go.
I mean, during the journey, there's a lot more involved than just mechanically getting a Land Rover around the world. There's the question of the visas, the getting fuel. And I mean, I had malaria, Delhi belly, food poisoning, 2 anaphylactic shocks and a snake bite. And David, what did you have?
A tooth.
He had a filling. Yeah, so we also we had armed escorts through Pakistan. We were impounded in Bangladesh. We slept on the border for 6 days there. We lost, what did you lose in weight?
20 kilos. 44 pounds.
And I lost about 15. I'm not advocating this as a diet, but you know what? It was
heck of a diet program.
Rice and beans never hurt anybody.
No.
We also, through, I'm talking the States now because obviously we're coming. You're coming from there now. We're quite familiar with your guys there, and we started to call into Land Rover garages. We met Jeff Aronson from Rovers North, and also down in Salt Lake City, there's guys
Great
there.
Great Basin Rovers.
Great Basin Rovers.
Bill Davis.
Yeah.
He's actually from our neck of the woods originally. That's a bit of trivia.
Cooks a mean barbecued salmon.
Yeah, with salmon he cooked for us and everything.
Well, Utah is known for their salmon.
Oh, yeah. We've just been privileged in Fort Lauderdale, Shane and Sandra. They've got a Camel Trophy Defender. We feel like it's become part of our home there, hasn't it?
Yeah. We noticed you didn't get to Pennsylvania.
We were saving the best for last. And on our return, that'll be one of our ports of call, especially with the free beer.
That's right. Yeah, you are welcome in the Pittsburgh area.
Okay, so that's what we've actually done, and we returned to England on the 1st of November 2014. And what we've done now is we haven't actually murdered or any of that stuff, each other. So we've
which not, is, not, you probably thought about it, though, right?
Many, many times, many. Actually, David had even planned which was the best continent to do it on, which would have been Africa. So, yeah, you can see how close it came.
And that was the start of your trip.
Thank you. Exactly.
I missed my opportunity. It would only cost me $50 to bribe the local policeman to look the other way and say it was an accident, despite the knife in the back.
So the plans now is, as we speak, I said earlier that last Thursday, was quite a momentous day for us because Lizzybus was taken back to the chassis. Literally, everything has come off. We're going to focus on weight, we're going to focus on security, and we're going to focus on accessibility. By that, I mean the big, great big roll cage that we had on has had to come off. We're having a pop-top roof that's come out from Germany, Icarus, from what I can remember. South Africa, sorry. But it's being shipped via Germany. And so we can actually sleep inside the vehicle because in the Congo at 3 in the morning, we had 3 very, very dark big guys on the roof trying to cut through kit. We have to, at this stage, get out of the vehicle and into the front to drive away. We want to run, not fight. So we're building it now. We've had a military back put on to make the station wagon into a two-door. So we can actually get from inside, still have a roof tent, but you get to it from inside. And we've had the bulkhead cut away so you can get straight to the steering wheel. We've had side lockers cut in, specifically for the tools so that we can air up the tyres, we can get to the tyres. We had 12 punctures on our last journey, so we're pretty cool at changing tyres and stuff. From the top of my head, we had 3 3 water pumps, a broker, 2 alternators, starter motor, 12 punctures. We had the prop shaft we've been talking about. David's probably better telling you this than I am. We had 2 clutches and was it you say which
one? Yeah, we replaced the clutch twice. It's the usual running repairs that you have on a Land Rover.
Yeah, right. But apparently if you actually think about it, what we did, a classic route would be from London to Cape Town or from Prudhoe Bay to Ushuaia, which is the Americas. We did the equivalent of about 11 of those in one trip. So if you take that all up, it would be one, you know, little breakdown, like a clutch or an alternator, starter motor. So, you know, she did well, considering she was looked after by us, who didn't have much of a clue.
Right, and you didn't lose anything major. It was all ancillary stuff, other than the clutch, which isn't a major part, but it's a major hassle to change out.
No, it as I say, nothing major mechanical went. As is an it's they say it's like your mother-in-law, she never dies. she always got us home, and that was the most important thing for us.
Right. So take us back a little bit. You are starting a new journey, and what's the plan for that? And when do you start on the new journey?
Aside from Pennsylvania.
Apart from Pennsylvania, we'll be coming through. Don't worry. our plan at the moment, hopefully, is to probably ship out May or June time this year. We're going to head east up through the Stans, through Mongolia, into Russia, all the way up to Magadan. So do the Road of Bones to Magadan, and then ship from Magadan to Japan. And then spend probably 6 months in Japan, and then ship to Alaska.
Nice.
And then come back down to the States and Canada. So we will be coming your way again.
If you can time one of your breakdowns to when you're here, we can get that taken care of for you, too.
The thing is, though, that we're going to let you see afterwards, or for people, the rebuild that we've done. We've had a couple of companies here in the UK. We are not sponsored. We are self-funded. But since we've been back, it's apparent that people seem to think we know what we're doing. It's a bit of an embarrassment, really. However, there's certain companies, Bearmac, Kony, Britpart, they've all decided that they are interested in what we're doing and would like their parts on our vehicle, and we're more than happy to put them on there. So she's got brand spanking new radiators, pipes, suspension. We're absolutely thrilled. And we've got a little guy, we've got to mention him, we call it Tonksville. His name's Brian Tonks, and he's got a little 4x4 place over in Derby, and he has been doing chassis takeoffs. And we figured that this wasn't far off a chassis takeoff, because you chose to take the whole lot off and rebuild her. So that's what he's been doing for us. And his name, it's Brian. And David's been spending as much time as possible with him, which has been good for him, because he's good at making tea and coffee.
Did you meet any other Overlander groups on your travels?
We've met quite a few Overlanders. When we were in Florida, we actually had three Land Rover Defenders, one UK plate, parked up outside a small place we rented for a week. So that was quite a sight. But we've met loads of people travelling around in Land Rovers, Toyotas, Unimogs, man trucks, motorcycles. There's a lot of people coming over to North America, Central and South America to do the big journeys.
I think another thing as well is, we've done it in a Defender, and we will never change. We're not saying it's the best vehicle, but for us it's iconic, and it's actually enhanced our journey, not just in America, because obviously the Defender there is unique, but across the globe it's absolutely iconic, and they see you in the distance and they come running, and we've had notes under the windscreen and everything. So it's, for us, it's just been wonderful, and we would only use a Defender.
Have Land Rover contacted you at all?
No. No, they're not interested, because we're doing it in old Land Rover. They're more interested in the newer stuff, gotcha. Which is a shame.
It is.
It is a shame, because we probably live about 20 minutes drive from the Solihull plant where Lizzybus was actually built. And little did we know, when she came off the production line, what lay in store for her once we got our hands on her. I have spoken to them, and they've done a great big end of production for the Defender, mm-hmm. which finished later this year. I'm not too sure. There's a bit of a grey area. Some people say it'll continue and stuff. However, they've got a big show going on there, and I have written to them and asked to have a photograph of Lizzybus, our Defender, being rebuilt and doing and going to do what she's doing with them. And they have actually agreed to let us go and take some photographs. So it's a small, tiny step, isn't it?
It's something.
It's something. And plus, you should go see the exhibit they have there while it's still up.
Yeah, if you get an opportunity. Yeah.
Nice. We'll take the Lizzybus there for a day out, I think.
That'd be cool.
Yeah, get some pictures.
Absolutely. Back to your original trip, was there ever an instance when you were close to ending the trip? Was there, like, safety or a mechanical breakdown that almost brought you to ending it?
Occasionally, you'd get a bit fed up when something had broken down. You felt conspired against. But no, overall, I think you have a bad day at work, a bad day at the office, you'd have a bad day on the road sometimes, think, do you know what, I'll put her in a container, I'll ship her home, and that'll be the end of it. But then you'll end the day, you'll crack open a cold beer, you'll watch a beautiful sunset, you'll see some dolphins swimming by, and you think, yep, life doesn't get any better.
I do have to say, what actually was happening towards the end of the journey is we had so many things going wrong, mechanically, little things that came to become a big problem. David lost all confidence, so we decided to ship back from through Canada and ship back from, where was it, honey?
Halifax.
From Halifax, yeah. But about 350 miles from there, we could only really get four gears. So we had we couldn't really get reverse, and we couldn't get fifth gear. So it's about 35 miles an hour with 450 miles to get her into a container. We were just sort of limping along, and it felt at that stage that everything was leaking. There's been we just sort of was losing confidence in her, and we actually, and for us personally, on a personal level, to live under that anxiety, you have to remember we don't have sat navs and walkie-talkies to fellow people and everything. We're on our own, and when it actually breaks, like the prop shaft or the this, then you there. David, to me, just seemed to keep taking bits off her. So you'd unplug it, throw it in the back. And I'd be thinking, oh, there'd be more in the back than there is underneath her. I'm not technical. He'd be able to tell you which parts they were. But quite a few were sitting in the back by the time we got home.
You get used to that when you drive an old Landy.
I don't understand. You don't have a production crew with you like Top Gear does?
Well, unlike Mr. Clarkson, we never actually got kicked out of... They welcomed us with open arms. We had a fantastic time in Argentina, so...
That's good to hear.
Well, you're not trying to destroy their desert either.
Yeah, or put something on your car to make to rub it in their face.
That's
either
a different country, but anyway.
Yeah, well, point taken. I have to point out you were in Quebec. I have a lot of friends in Quebec City, and I was just mesmerized by the photo you had with Chateau Frontenac up in the hill. I love Quebec, so I just had a little shout out to you on that
it's
picture.
It's hard to take a bad picture with the Chateau Frontenac in it.
Valid point.
True.
When we parked outside the chateau, I wanted one. Obviously, the photograph you saw was down below with the chateau above us, but we also drove up to it down all the little cobbled streets. Mm-hmm. And we parked outside, and it was just absolutely fabulous. The manager of the hotel came out, was chatting to us, and all the tourists were coming around. They were there to see this magnificent chateau, and they were all taking photographs of Lizzie Buss, which was a real privilege. It's been a real privilege.
Yeah, if you ever get back to Quebec City, I can hook up with people. So they
thank you very much.
Oh, yeah, it's a great town.
Poutine. Will that be in the best room of the chateau?
I wouldn't go that far. did you have poutine when you were there? That's
yes, yeah. Right?
Yep, that's where
poutine chips started.
Chips with gravy and cheese curd. Yep.
Yeah, that's the one.
Good stuff. Yeah, that's good drunk food.
Yeah, but I was a little concerned how yellow it was. I'm not used to such bright yellow food.
Quebec City is the oldest city in North America. It celebrated their 400th anniversary about 5 years ago. Just a little bit of information.
Stunningly beautiful place.
Isn't it? Yes.
Yes.
And started by your arch enemies, the French.
Well, we weren't going to comment on that.
I wasn't going to mention anything about that. But,
well,
so you...
And Pittsburgh, you know, you kicked the French out of Pittsburgh to create Pittsburgh. So this has a very good British historical significance.
But we beat the French at rugby, which is the most important thing.
There you go.
And, of course, you could argue that the motor vehicle wouldn't be what it was if your folks hadn't stomped on the French.
Absolutely.
So for anyone planning an off-road journey, excuse me, an overland journey, I know you have a bunch of tips and things to take with you on your website, which we'll have a link to in the show notes. But is there anything that wasn't discussed on there that you'd throw out to our listeners? Maybe something that's not mechanically related?
The one thing we would say, with the person you're traveling with, if we'd driven around the world in a Toyota Land Cruiser, we'd have probably lasted about 6 weeks. because we'd have to have talked to each other. When you drive a Land Rover, you don't have to talk because it's too noisy.
Just shut up and drive.
Yeah, shut up and drive. There's no point saying anything because they can't hear what you're saying.
Did you wear earplugs?
Well, actually, we...
Pardon? I can't hear you. Yeah. Pardon? I said there's ringing noise in my ears.
Yeah. The odd thing is that we never even had a radio, well, a working radio in Elizabeth, because David has said he had to listen to the engine. So I can tell you exactly how an engine sounds. I don't know if it's one of the qualities I particularly want to possess, but I do have it.
Do you still hear it after it's been switched off?
24/7.
Yep.
Do you know what gear it's in based on the sound?
Yep. And I even heard a valve pop on the tire.
Wow.
When we were driving, and I actually heard it pop out.
Yeah, actually, I'm still thinking about what you said about at what point was there a point, relationship-wise or vehicle-wise, where the trip nearly actually came to a halt. There was many, many times, because one that springs to mind is we switched her off, the Land Rover, this is, and the engine kept running, and basically all the wires had fused together, so she was nearly on fire.
Uh-huh.
We managed to get her to a garage in Florianópolis in Brazil, and it was immaculate, high-end garage.
It's a Range Rover garage.
Yeah. Mm. Just to ask them if they had this starter motor part, which David had sort of decided it might have been. But they dragged us inside, and we lived in there for 3.5 days. They had little espresso coffee cups made out of china. All the customers came in, and there's our washing hanging on the side where the mechanics washed, and in the morning they'd come in and we were in their shower block. 3.5 days later, it was Welcome to the Top, the garage was called, in Florianópolis, and they took us in and they said it was going to be something like $80 an hour or something.
$90 an hour.
We'd been in there for 2.5, nearly 3 days.
Wow.
In the end, they cut us a deal. What they did is they chopped out the bad wiring section, which had fused to the engine block,
yep.
And rewired it all. And as I said, given us free Wi-Fi, a bed for the night, because we wouldn't move. We didn't go anywhere. And it ended up $200, wasn't it?
$45 an hour for 7 hours.
Yeah. So from one minute you think, this is the end, we can't afford it, the whole thing, the vehicle's going to explode with us in it. And there you are, another day dawns, and off you go, happy as Larry, feeling all confident till the next one. So
just from a safety standard, I'll observe, there's one wire that goes to your fuel injection pump. It would be wise to know where that wire is, because if there ever is an electrical mishap, pull that wire and the engine will stop.
Is that the wire?
Yeah, that's the one. We rewired that with a little on-off switch.
Okay, I was going to say, put a piece of string on it or something, and you can just...
Yeah.
We have a little on-off switch on that, on the stop solenoid.
There you go. Yeah, if you know where that wire is and you can pull it, you can shut the engine off.
Yeah. Before it runs away on you.
Did we have that fitted when we were...
Yeah, we had that fitted.
Okay.
So you...
What we did as well is we just disconnected the battery.
Okay. That's a good way to smoke your alternator if you're not careful, however.
Yes. Thank you.
Too late now. Where were you, Harold?
Oh, sorry.
They didn't ask. 5 years ago, and they were in Brazil. Where were you?
Here.
I'm curious what the story behind getting pulled over by the state police in Vermont was, because, you know.
You live in Vermont.
I live in Vermont, so.
Well,
you know,
if anywhere you could
interesting
possibly
stories.
Exceed the speed limit, it would be in Vermont.
A Land Rover exceed the speed limit? I don't think so.
You haven't...
No,
Vermont has no...
If it's 30 miles an hour, we'd never be able to exceed it.
Okay.
Yeah,
especially
I'll tell
since
you what,
I bet that was
you're
limping to Halifax.
Sorry. Yeah, when we were in Arizona, the sun was so strong, it actually nearly destroyed the back number plate. It bleached it, so you couldn't read it. You could read it, but not too good. So we were driving through Vermont, actually on the way to Rovers North, wasn't it? Yeah.
To get a pea gasket.
To get a pea gasket. And we were pulled over by the state troopers. And I have to say, they are absolutely delightful. I wanted to take one home with me, but David said there was no room. And after chatting for a while, the guys, we showed them all our documents and stuff. And then he said, you know what? You have to be the most interesting people that we have ever stopped. And so we chatted to them for 20 minutes or so, and off we went. By the time we got to Rovers North, the guys there said, we'd just seen you on the Facebook page of the Vermont Police. They had taken a photograph of us, they put it on Facebook, and there was 1,000 comments on Facebook by the time we got to Rovers North. It was just a wonderful. And I've just actually written to them the other day to tell them what we're up to and where we are.
I don't know that the Pennsylvania State Troopers would be as hospitable here.
I don't think so.
No, our stateies, they will pull over anybody out of state with anything that they can find to pull you over for, but they are friendly, so.
They do it just for somebody to talk to?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, in Pennsylvania. So as an Alabama State Trooper pointed out to me, he wouldn't know which box to tick on the form. Now, I know there's a reflection on state troopers in Alabama, but he says, you know, you're more than out of state. There's no box on his form to tick for us.
Well,
exactly.
There's a famous story here from one of our Land Rover friends who was bringing a vehicle from out of state through Pennsylvania. A trooper pulled him over at 3 in the morning, and same kind of situation. He looked at this car that was falling apart, and our friend was driving it just to park it, take the engine out. And the trooper just said, keep going. Just keep going. Get home, and I don't want to deal with this.
Yeah, too much paperwork.
Too much paperwork.
Yeah.
The thing is that the state troopers in Vermont to us was like absolutely perfect, because we were going through Africa. I think probably the worst was the Congo and Cote d'Ivoire and all through there. And I actually counted one day, and we were being stopped up to 30 times a day by police, military. We've been held at gunpoint. We've had our documents locked in the drawer, the Luger pistol put on the desk. This is pretty scary when nobody knows where you are, what you're up to, what you're doing. But I think the fear factor cannot stay at that level constantly. So over a period of time, you sort of go, okay, then fine. Well, if we can't go, so I'd get my chair and I'd start reading a book. And they go, you can't stay there. And we go, well, monsieur, you have our documents. You have Luger pistol. Bang, bang, bang. Where can we go? So eventually, I mean, we're here. So obviously it wasn't quite as bad as it might seem. But there were some moments when you were uncomfortable.
Following along with that, so what was the percentage of that during your journey? Was that 10% of it? Or did you find most people were hospitable, friendly, welcoming? Or was there more of that fear factor?
I think through most of the journey, most people, about 99%, have been incredibly friendly. For being hassled by police and military, West Coast Africa was probably the worst. But after that, we had very few issues with authorities throughout the rest of the world.
Did you have to make use of bribes very much?
No, I think we paid bribes 3 times in total.
Okay.
And if you put that onto the average of how many times we're being stopped, you see, the problem is that once you pay, then I think there's something about it. You get this air of, I'm not giving you anything. We worked on about $75 a day between us. We rented a couple of properties out in England, and that's how we financed this odyssey, let's say. So if we just gave, say they stop us 30 times a day, and we gave half of them $1 each, we're not going to eat the next day. So necessity made it that we couldn't pay these people, which actually was quite good. So we'd try different things. At one stage, we actually bargained, and we ended up with you give them a soft drink, or you give them a pen, or you just give them nothing. But just
bartering your bribes.
Yeah. Huh. We're back here in the UK, and we're living with my sister. And it's been actually very difficult, not only for my sister, my identical twin sister, who's had to adjust to being without me, let's say, because we used to do everything together. And we suddenly find that we're just complete utter strangers here. We love the English. We love being English. But we're diluted quite a lot, and there's a lot of the traffic and, you know, the shopping that is not necessary to us anymore.
So you've had a taste of a different life, and now it's difficult to get back into the old routine.
You're absolutely right. And so it's hard because the last 5.5 years, when you're chatting with somebody, I don't really know how much the price of bread is over at Tesco's and stuff like that. We only know where we can get the next deer for, who's going to give us the shocks or what type of roof tent. And that's our priority and focus. So it's been quite challenging coming home.
The one question that's been on my mind during this whole interview, and I haven't found a good way to sneak it in, but where does the Lizzie bus come from?
Okay. It's okay, you say.
Well, basically, we bought the Land Rover. It had a Brown Church roof rack on it. Jane said it looked like a crown, and Jane's sister lives in Elizabeth Road.
Okay.
So the Land Rover got called Elizabeth, and also Queen Elizabeth is obviously our queen. So she got called Elizabeth. She was a station wagon, so a 12-seater. So we'd have one designated driver, could take 12 of us out. So
it's a bus.
Got called a bus. So everyone said, are we going in the Lizzie bus? So she got called Lizzie bus. So everyone thinks Jane is Lizzie when actually she's Jane.
I often get emails from people saying, hi, Lizzie, how are you doing? But I don't mind. It's all part of the journey.
Just wait till David gets called Lizzie sometime.
He'd love it. He'd love to have
I look good with pink nails.
Well, obviously, you're considering a second journey. So I'm not going to ask the question, would you do it again? But for anyone contemplating overlanding, such as you've done, do you have any other ideas, words of wisdom? Where's the place to start, or things to avoid, things that they shouldn't do, like go through Western Africa?
What I'd like to say is a question that's asked very often of us is people put things off. They think the main point here is the fact that you have to have the money. Well, obviously, if you don't have the money, you're not going anywhere. But there's different levels. You can do it at cheaper or more expensive. The biggest thing, really, is the right time. Because when you're young, you've got college and stuff like that. And then you move on and you get married and you have the wife and, you know, responsibilities there. Then you have the children. And then before you know it, they're off at university and the time's gone. And then university leads to grandchildren and the whole cycle. And people have asked us over, when do you know it's the right time? And I would sort of say it's when you have no more excuses. When you've got the grand. On this journey, I became a grandmother, my daughter got married, and my mother passed away. Life carries on. There is never a perfect time. But if you don't do it before you blink, it's too late. Your health, your everything. And you look at yourself. I mean, we set off, I was 51, David was 53. The next journey, we'll be coming into our 60s, and we're still can see the foreseeable future doing this, but you have to do it. Don't wake up and think, wake up and do, because it's gone. Your opportunity will go.
So what you're saying is that you need to prioritize what you're willing to miss out on.
What you're willing to miss out on. Don't beat yourself up if your priority is your children and you know, your dog or your favorite goldfish. I don't know, but if you really have this little, every so often this little thing in your mind says, oh, it'd be fantastic to do what they're doing, even if you only do out of your comfort zone and go, you know, go away for 3 months instead of 3 weeks and plan, it's something until eventually you'll see that horizon and you'll go, you know what, we want more and we're going to do this.
I think that's a great life lesson right there. I completely agree with you. I'm actually considering a overland journey myself in North America, and I'm planning it in 2017, and I'm going to do it.
Yeah, Land Rover have a phrase, one life, live it. And you don't have to be like two mad English people and drive around the world. Just do something different. Just get off the beaten track a little further than you perhaps would do in normal life, and you'll enjoy it. I mean, we were taken out by the Northern Land Rover.
Northern
California Land Rover Club. Once a year, they make a little journey into Death Valley. go and join your local Land Rover. Go and do something like that. It's different, and you'll get a liking for it. That's all it needs to be as a starter. Just whet your appetite with that.
Death Valley, hike or die.
It was brilliant. It was the most fun. With this funny thing that you Americans call rock crawling.
Yes.
Yep.
In a 2.8-ton Land Rover Defender with all our worldly goods on it. They showed us routes that they've got, like, high lift kits, they've got low ratio transfer boxes, everything, and we're in a standard Land Rover Defender, and we did it.
Wow. Good for you.
So it was challenging and a little bit frightening sometimes, but we did it, and it was a wonderful time. Just get out there and enjoy it, because that's what it's all about.
And that's one of the great testaments to what is so great about the Defender. You can kit them up, you can do all kinds of really crazy things to it, but even if you leave it stock, you can still get there.
Yep, yeah, absolutely. You don't need sort of locking differentials. The most important differential is the gray one between your ears.
Ooh, look at that. That was nice. That was well played.
That was prophetic.
That was. I like
that. I'm in my zen moment at the moment.
Need a bumper sticker.
I like that.
Yeah, it's the gray one between the ears. That's the most important differential. That's the one that gets you into trouble. It's also the one that gets you out of trouble.
That's the truth.
Is that your journey on the map behind you there?
Yes. Hang on, can we? You might be able to see that. Hang on.
There is a map on your website.
Yeah.
Yeah, but we started.
Yeah, I can't really see on our picture, but that's my head. So.
Yeah, your head. It's fantastic.
Yeah, that's the bold bit.
So that's Little England, and that's all the way Australia and way back up. Yeah.
It seems a lot more than 1,600 miles. Is that what? Oh, no,
134,000.
134,000
miles.
Move
the decimal place,
yeah,
John.
I did. Yeah. 134,000 miles.
Do you know how many oil changes you have to do on that journey?
No. How many?
Far too many. I lost count. After about 25, I lost count.
Well, I can sort of estimate how much oil you're pouring in the top,
It's not how much you put in, it's how much you lose on a daily basis.
Exactly. I'm there's a big difference between what you pour in the top and what you actually remove out of the sump.
Yeah, it's just marking its territory.
We did an overland show in Flagstaff, Arizona. We actually feature vehicle. We were parked at the side of a row of Unimogs, one of which actually went double its height. It's called Perkimog, yep. And she's Russian, and they're absolutely fantastic. And I have to say that we really enjoyed it. It was our first real overland show as such, and we had a real such a good time there with everybody. But what I found was, there's so many choices available now, and there's so much kit, and sometimes we work on the theory that first of all, we haven't got that much money to spend, but if you keep it simple, then you can over-analyse and over-complicate kit and equipment and routes and everything. So that I would say to people out there, keep it simple. Don't keep looking at too many websites, because you'll get to the point where you're so confused. Just listen. One of the good rules of thumb is to actually speak to somebody who's been out there and done it. And that's at the moment how David and I feel, is that we're actually almost ambassadors for this. Not saying we know what we're doing, but we're just saying that we did it and we know what works for us. So I think we've got a fairer point of view on what does work. So, and that's what we're doing now. We're trying to, anyone who writes to us or thinking about doing it, David is the brains, and everything to me is called a thing. It's a thing that. So we'll write to anybody and explain or help them in any way that we can.
Your website does a nice job of giving you the good, the bad, and the ugly, as you call it, of things to consider, things to bring along with, not things to not bring along. So I direct people that way.
It's a very basic website. The new improved one will be a lot better.
Will there be sound as soon as you start the homepage, or can you turn that off?
You can probably turn it off somewhere.
I can't figured it out yet.
it was a classic piece of English rock music by Slade in the 1970s.
There you go.
I think what we're planning to do a bit more of this time is, because we just left on a wing and a prayer last time and we had a little tiny camera and all the rest of it, things have improved. We're thinking about having a GoPro, and we're thinking about having a little bit more interacting stuff where we can put a weekly live, not live, but a weekly blog where we show people little videos and stuff like that. We don't want to, again, overcomplicate the record keeping, where you don't begin to enjoy the journey because you're involved in recording what's happened. But there's so much information that you can see people go, oh, well, that looks good. No, I wouldn't like that. So I think this time we'll try and record it slightly better and, you know, get a little bit of a corporate image going on probably. But not too much.
Well, you have some sponsors now, don't you?
Yes. Oh, of course. Yes, you know.
Get them to help you out.
Yeah.
Marketing departments.
Do you have a timetable for when the next journey is taking off?
June, right?
Hopefully, but we learned on our journey that time at the end of the day is, the word they use is inshallah, God willing.
Yeah. So as soon as the truck is ready and you guys are good to go, you're taking off?
As long as it's not midwinter in Siberia, we'll be off.
Yeah, well, I hope to miss the Russian winter. We don't want to be doing a scene from Dr. Zhivago or any of that. Although I do like the music and stuff. It looked a bit chilly.
Chilly, yeah, that's a good word for it, chilly.
It's only minus 40 degrees Celsius.
Oh, nothing.
I've been there.
This time, yeah, we didn't have any, we don't have air conditioning in Elizabeth, and we're not going to change that.
At 40 below, you don't need air conditioning.
No, you don't, but there's also the chance that we'll be going back to hotter places. So in the Sudan, we reached temperatures of, what was it in the cab?
60 degrees Celsius.
60 degrees Celsius in the cab.
140 Fahrenheit.
Yeah, and the coldest was in Turkey and Peru when we were at minus something.
Minus 15 degrees C.
We had to push her into the sun because the diesel had actually gone looked like custard. So that was that wasn't one of our better days.
So what's your ETA for reaching North America on the new journey?
Probably about a year and a half, I think.
Okay. So that would a year and a half when you set out, or a year and a half from now?
Probably a year and a half when you set out, and unless Mr. Putin has some different ideas for us.
Maybe in time to coincide with your big
That would put us
voyage.
In 2017. Yeah, you're right.
That could be fun.
Yeah.
That would be fun.
Interesting. We'll crack a few beers and we'll see you then. Make a dance.
Absolutely.
Here on your podcast.
We may actually do a special podcast. Wherever you are, wherever we are, you arrive in, we'll do a special podcast just for you.
Sounds exciting.
Absolutely. And if you're out and about on your journey at any time, you want to join the podcast, let us know. It'd be great to have some updates from you.
You would love to.
That'd be great.
Yeah, with all our super duper equipment and stuff like that.
It doesn't take much. If you were here, you'd understand why I say that.
Yeah. Well, we've just been out. We've been over to Land Rover's Live with Matt and Amy, which I see you've had on your show. We've been over to their nice little place where their film studio stuff.
They do a nice job.
Yeah, they're a real studio.
Yeah.
He's actually a real producer. And, he gets paid for that, his day job.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, but then again, we did last time go to the treehouse in a typical English summer, which was bloody freezing, and he stripped off to his T-shirt, and we've got coats on and everything, and the wind's blowing, but it made for a pleasant scene.
I'm curious how far along the rebuild of Lizzybus is at this point. It looked like you maybe had it at a rolling chassis rebuilt.
Yeah, the rolling chassis has been rebuilt. They've got the front wings on, the bulkhead rewired, new engine, new gearbox, and now the tub apparently went on yesterday. So it's just the sides and the roof to do, then the internal fit out, and we're done.
Oh, very nice. Coming along.
Yeah.
Yeah. At the moment, the best place to see Elizabeth, because I've been documenting each week the rebuild up to week 7 we're on now, in photographs and everything, would be the Facebook page rather than the website. So if you went on to just, if you bought Elizabeth Lizzie Bus up on Facebook, you'll actually see photographs and a little bit of videoing of the rebuild and exactly how it's coming along and at what stage we're at, more than the website, to be truthful.
I saw the Facebook YouTube link of the engine being fired.
Yeah. Yes, that's it. Oh,
that's always a big day.
The engine put it, new engine put in my 109. That was a big day for us too to fire that up. I took a video of that myself. I understand. We'll have a link to your Facebook page from our website, and also to your website, so the people can get to it without having to do much searching.
That'd be fabulous. Yeah.
We look forward to your future updates and letting us know how the journey goes. We'll follow you along on Facebook and your website, and hopefully you'll join us in the future on the podcast. You're always welcome.
Thank you. I hear the IPAs calling already.
we have other beers, too. There's stouts and ales and all sorts of fun things.
I've tried a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. There's some good... I counted in the Pittsburgh area, there's like 23 breweries now in the Pittsburgh area.
Yeah, the growth of the microbrewery.
It's outstanding. Someone told me there's 40 in the city of Portland, Oregon. 40 breweries.
Yeah. Nice.
What's that tell you?
I'm waiting for the growth of the micro distillery.
There are. There's now two distilleries in Pittsburgh.
I know there are some. I'm just waiting for the trend to really take off.
I think that's a trend.
Just try distilling your own.
He needs another hobby.
Yeah, I have nothing else to do with my day.
Well, thanks very much, Dave and Jane, for joining us today on the podcast. It was fantastic. Good to hear your stories, and glad you survived 135,000 miles. And we look forward to another 135,000 miles. We want to hear all about that. That brings us to the conclusion of the 24th edition of the Centersteer podcast. This has been the second anniversary edition. Thanks to Dave and Jane of the Lizzie Bus for joining us for that episode. And we look forward to hearing more about their journey as they set out for the second time around the world. I should have used my Clarkson voice. The world. You can get
you might get a job.
You know, Clark.
Or kicked off this podcast.
We can get Clarkson to join you on your journey. He has nothing to do.
Oh, absolutely. I couldn't face the abuse and being punched in the face.
Oh,
nicely. Well,
plus, he'll break your truck.
Yeah.
He couldn't break a Toyota.
No, they couldn't kill. They couldn't.
Not
they
for lack of attempting.
They couldn't kill the Toyota off. It was impressive.
Very much. Twice, three times. So how many? They did two different series on that, or two different film.
They tried a couple different times, doing multiple attacks, and still lives. Sort of
unbelievable. That's a testament to Toyotas.
Absolutely. Well, thanks again, everybody, for listening to the podcast. On behalf of Mark, Harold, Morgan, thank you for joining us, and I'll let Dave and Jane, thank you for joining us, and I'll let you have the last word.
Thank you from Birmingham, England.
Yes, thank you for having us. It's been absolutely great, and we'll keep you updated with everything that we're doing and planning on doing and all our trials and tribulations. So on our way to Russia and through the Road of Bones, but we've filled that.
And on to Pittsburgh.
On to Pittsburgh.
Here we come.
Thank you.
Thank
you
very much. Good night.
The Centersteer theme song, Sunset Rider by the Tritons, is available from Mivio's Music Alley. Check it out at music.mivio.com.
Okay, and just a warning that this may be a little bit rough. I did my research, but I didn't get a chance to really polish it up all that much.
No apologies. Don't apologize. This is all a volunteer run.